This is a show about bodies. I have a body. You have a body.
We all have bodies. Bodies are weird. Bodies are funny. Bodies are good.
Here lies plenty of bodies, but we promise we aren't murderers.
If you feel squeamish about bodies, don't fear.
You'll find nothing but body positivity here.
Welcome to Beautiful Bodies.
Folks, before we get started, it's important for you to know that in this episode, we'll be talking about some troubling topics. We talk about shitty doctors and forced medical exams, how badly black women are treated in the medical community, and we touch on a traumatic birthing story. So we hope that you take care of yourself, and if that means not listening to this one, then please do so. If you do decide to stick around, we hope that you enjoy the sounds of the finches in the background. And I'll include a little bit of them right before the episode. Okay, thanks. We hope you enjoy. Welcome to Beautiful Bodies, your regular dose of radical positivity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Say your name.
I'm Willa Wallace.
And I'm Melissa Mazur.
Oh, boy. And we promised, but we didn't promise.
Yeah, I mean, we
alluded to.
Yeah, we said that our third episode was going to be about sex.
But things happened.
Things happened, and we decided that it would be a better use of our time and energy to talk about surviving doctors.
Right, because as we do this podcast, it's also sort of therapy.
Absolutely.
I mean, why pretend?
Why pretend? It really is therapy with just whoever shows up on iTunes listening.
That's true.
And we kind of serve as each other's therapists. Or,
I mean, supporters. Friendship?
Yeah.
Question mark?
Yeah, that's what friendship is.
Damn.
I'm relying emotionally on your loved ones. So let's talk about why we want to do this.
Right. So Liz and I mean, we've both had very recent sort of traumatic healthcare experiences.
Yeah.
Do you want to?
Yeah, I'll go first. Just
dive in there like they did.
Yeah. Oh, God. I actually haven't seen a general practitioner in 4 years, probably.
It's a long time.
Yeah. So I don't deal very regularly with people commenting on my weight or medical professional commenting on my weight. And this is not that kind of story. It's not about... Although that happens, and happens very, very regularly, that doctors blame whatever you think is wrong with you, they blame it on your weight.
Of course.
That is a different story. So I thought, this is going to be explicit. We're all just going to roll with it.
Yeah.
Especially since our last episode was just about periods. So.
Yeah, you should be ready.
Yeah. So I thought that I had a yeast infection. Mm-hmm. And I went to the convenient care clinic in mm-hmm. Beloit. And
you gonna say why? You went to the...
Yeah, so I don't put things up my vagina, mm-hmm. as we discussed in the period episode.
Right.
And so I felt that I was unable to use an over-the-counter yeast infection medication.
Which requires
you to put a vaginal suppository inside of you.
Yeah.
And this was not, to me, a very interesting or viable option.
No.
So I went to convenient care. And the doctor was just, like, barely even looked me in the eye, came in the room.
Male
doctor, yes. So, first the nurse came in and was like, okay, you need to undress from the waist down. And I was like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
I am very, very, very bad at controlling my anxiety when I'm in a situation where someone is, you know, putting their face between my legs. And I am, like, my OB at home. I know her, and yeah. She knows me, and she understands that I'm anxious, and, like, it's a very, like, safe place for me.
Yeah.
And this guy just, like, walked in the room, said two words to me, and just stuck a speculum inside me. And I was, like, very, very, very vocal about how uncomfortable and how much I was in pain.
Yeah.
I was like, this hurts, this hurts, this hurts. This is not okay. He just totally ignored me the whole time. And I left and they called me and they were like, yeah, you don't have a yeast infection. So instead you should just make an appointment with an OB. And I was like, great.
Why couldn't they just have, like, cotton swabbed you?
I know, exactly. Like, why you gotta fucking shove this thing in?
Is it the metal one?
Yeah. What the fuck? It's horrible.
I mean, at least use a plastic one that isn't ice cold.
I know. It was absolutely horrible.
Jeez.
And so then I go to this OB, mm-hmm. and I'm like, this is gonna be just as traumatic,
right.
just as terrible. She was really, really nice.
Thank God.
Yeah, she was so supportive and so understanding. And, like, talked me through everything she was doing and, like, knew that I was anxious and that I was, like, in pain and that she was very, very understanding and working really hard to comfort me.
Yeah.
And that was wild. Mm-hmm. Where I literally can't remember the last time a doctor, like, was giving me positive reinforcement where she was like, you're doing great.
Mm-hmm.
Everything's okay.
Yeah.
You're doing a real good job. She followed up with me multiple times. Like, she was so, so, so great.
Mm-hmm.
And it really made me feel a lot better. But, you know, just, was kind of a bad day.
Yeah. Multiple days.
Yeah. Multiple days. They were pretty bad. And then I found out that I had a UTI and it was the strain of UTI that was resistant to the antibiotics they gave me. So I had to get different antibiotics, which are horse pills, by the way. It was so bad. As soon as I took one this morning, I thought it was going to throw up. I was oh no, I'm pretty bad at it. And it wasn't like a capsule. It was like the powder. It was really gross.
I hate those.
Yeah. But it's wild too, because I know that I hate doctors. Like, I know that I get very uncomfortable in medical situations, but this is the first time where I genuinely felt, like, violated.
Yeah.
And that a doctor, like, wasn't listening to me and didn't care about what I had to say.
That's terrifying.
Yeah, it's super terrifying. It was really bad.
Yeah.
I mean, now that it's been a few days, I can kind of talk about it. But, like, I was texting Willow the whole time, just being like, I don't want to do this. I don't want to do this. And it taught me a very valuable lesson that when I am uncomfortable in a medical situation, I have the right to say, you know what? I'm not going to do this right now.
Right.
I'm going to research my other options and I'm going to leave.
Right. Because we're really not taught that, like, if you're in a hospital or if you're in a medical situation, that you can say, no,
yeah,
I'm not comfortable with this, right? If they say, all right, you know, take your clothes off. At the next step, like, you know, this crazy doctor man comes in, like, with this medical metal thing.
Mm-hmm. On the one hand, it's difficult for people who are not doctors to remember that they have these rights. And it's not your fault.
Absolutely.
It's not your fault if you, like, are too nervous to say no. It's not your fault if you've been taught your whole life that this doctor is going to do what's best for you and you just need to trust them. That's not your fault. But being in tune with your needs at that moment is really difficult and really important.
Right. And, like, how do you sort of assert your own autonomy in a terrifying moment like that and be like, no.
Yeah.
And period. Right. And I can imagine there have been times when people have done that and the doctors don't care.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah. I shudder to think what it would have been like if I don't know what would have happened.
Yeah.
But what about how is your medical life going, Willow?
Oh my gosh.
Tell me about that.
So, right, I saw this amazing pain specialist in UW-Madison. Light bulb went on. I had an amazing meeting, and he prescribed Lyrica for me, which is, you know, a special pain medicine that specifically targets things like fibromyalgia and, like, nerve pain. And the intent there is to sort of take down my pain level, like the background sort of buzz of pain, so that way we can work on, you know, my hyperextension or, like, maybe what else is causing me pain.
Sure.
And just so I can focus on that instead of being distracted.
For sure.
And so one thing that was weird is they printed it out. Like, they couldn't.
The prescription?
Yeah. Like, they couldn't call it into the pharmacy. Super weird.
That is strange.
So I go to my pharmacy. You know, I give them the paper slip. I go away. I come back. And the woman says, Right. So there's been a problem. You know, your insurance says it's not going to cover this, and it's $780 for a month.
Yeah, a month.
Oh, and then she gives me a post-it note that says, here are other medications that, you know, your insurance would rather, you know, that you be on.
Which are different medications and don't do the thing that your doctor wants this medicine to accomplish.
Right, exactly. So, yeah, keep in mind there's no generic, FDA generic for Lyrica.
So then you called the insurance company.
I did. So I've been back and forth and back and forth, right, between my insurance company and between my doctor's office. And I want to say, one, it's totally psychological warfare.
Yeah.
The way that they have you call.
Yeah.
They have you call and wait, and you have to enter, like, a million different pieces of information each time to the robot person.
I know, that's the worst. And just let me talk to a human being.
No, but then it's like, okay, fine, I'll give you my information, robot person. But then when I talk to a real human, they don't have it.
Yeah.
And I have to tell it to them again. Ugh. And then it's been like a back and forth between like, oh, well, you need to be in the Express Script pre-authorization zone. And I'm like, okay. And they send me over there and they're like, oh no, you're in the wrong place. You need to go into pharmacy pre-authorization.
Sending you back and forth and back and forth.
And then I get disconnected.
Of course.
They make me listen to smooth jazz.
Yeah. A courtesy disconnect. That's the worst.
Ooh, God. And they're always like, stay on the line and fill out a survey. But I tried to. So I talked to a rather unpleasant woman and I stayed on the line and like we sort of like tried to dupe each other out where she didn't want to hang up.
Yeah.
And I wasn't going to hang up because I wanted to take the survey.
Yeah.
She hung up. No survey option.
Of course.
It just wasn't there. So when I talked to my doctor's office, they said, yeah, you know, your insurance called us and said that, you know, we will not cover Lyrica.
Yeah.
And you need to try gabapentin first. And if this person has a bad reaction, then they can go on Lyrica.
Sure. So what is gabapentin?
Gabapentin it used to be used as like an anti-seizure epilepsy drug.
Right.
And it still is like really high doses.
Yeah. I also take a anti-seizure drug for my mood stabilizer, which is pretty funny.
Yeah.
Apparently, seizure medication is really good for a lot of stuff.
Oh, my God. And so that's how it was initially introduced to me. So first off, I'm, like, totally turned off, where I'm like...
Yeah.
And then I started to look into, like, the side effects of it. And a potential side effect is seizures.
Yeah.
Disorientation, like... dizziness, like irritable bowels, right? All of these things where I already basically have all of these issues.
You're already dealing with all that.
Right. So.
So this isn't going to help you.
No. And my doctor was like, yeah, Lyrica. And Lyrica has like less side effects. So I called back my insurance company today, talked to five different people, was disconnected, you know. And I finally talked to a woman who told me that I was lying. Which is just the best.
Yeah.
When I was like,
you don't know anything about your own body. Your experiences, nope, don't matter.
Right. When I told her that, like, yesterday the insurance called my doctor's office and told them, no, we won't do Lyrica. And she was like, that's false. Like, they're lying or you're lying. Like, that, you know, like, I talk to doctor's offices all day and we don't do that. So yesterday the pre-authorization was denied verbally over the phone, but they don't have any record of that.
Oh.
And so now they're saying, yeah, well, that never happened. So like your doctor's office just didn't fill out this form. So now I'm waiting for a call back from the doctor's office to get that. And the woman was like, yeah, and it could be denied again, you know, cause there's like a whole list of things we want you to try first before you try the expensive Lyrica.
But it seems like you're just going to continue to be in pain and feel gross until you get the Lyrica, no matter what.
Yeah. And it's just like the gabapentin has such bad side effects.
Yeah.
And you get like opioid-like withdrawals when you go off of it.
Yeah. And that's really what you're trying to avoid.
You know, great point, Melissa. I am trying to avoid opioid-like withdrawals.
Yeah, I mean, we have such a ridiculous opioid crisis now that is in large part created by people who get hooked on pain medication and then find that these things that you can get illegally are cheaper.
Right, exactly.
Which is wild.
And gabapentin is addictive.
Yeah.
So it's a big fat mess.
Yeah, you don't want to be on an addictive drug. And then we also had a friend.
Oh.
I know, I feel so bad. Like I said at the beginning, like, I haven't seen a GP in basically 4 years, and so I haven't had anybody say anything about my weight.
Or at least a mental health professional.
Yeah, exactly. A mental health professional that I see lots of mental health professionals, and none of them have commented on my weight, which is nice. But we had a friend who went to the doctor for back pain.
Right. She has scoliosis, and she has PCOS.
Which is polycystic ovary syndrome, which we'll do a whole episode on.
Yeah. And, right, just classic. She got in, and her doctor's like, well, you're fat.
Yeah.
That's why you're in crippling pain.
Yeah, it's all because of your weight. It has nothing to do with an actual problem.
Right, and then her suggestions were, well, have you tried having a better diet and better exercise?
Yeah.
And right, like, if you know anything about PCOS...
Yeah. That's not how that works.
That's not how that works, right? Your body is resistant to losing fat.
Yeah, super resistant to losing fat. And your body is also, like, going through a lot of stuff that prioritizes... That prioritizes other parts of your body instead of prioritizing like your metabolism and stuff like that. So it's a situation where this doctor was fat phobic, was trained in a way that prioritizes BMI, which we'll also do an episode on, which is your body mass index, in case you didn't know.
Which is a stupid math dumb fraction for...
Yeah, it's a very, very bad way of measuring a person's...
value.
Yeah, well, yeah, it does. It does measure your value. But it's a really bad way of determining a person's health.
Right.
Because, I mean, it's been widely disproven in a lot of different ways, but it's supposed to calculate like how much body fat you have. And so it recommends like a specific range for you to be within. And if you're outside of that range, then doctors think they can just blame anything that's wrong with you on your weight.
Right. And, you know, our friend grew up, right? Her mom is a nurse, right? So she, you would think, right, like would have that sort of like autonomy or like maybe like some magical skills for being like, yo, this isn't cool. And she even said like, you know, like, I like my body.
Yeah.
And, like, that's not the problem here.
Yeah.
And just didn't matter.
Yeah. That's the worst. Doctors are, they're blinded in a lot of ways. And even, it's not only, you know, the medical professional is still very white and male.
Right.
But even doctors who aren't white males have still been educated within the same system.
Totally.
And are reproducing the ideas that they've been taught.
Right. Or I was just talking with our friend who's going to nursing school about like bedside manner.
Yeah.
And I met a doctor in residency the other day and I just sort of was asking him, shooting the shit, like, yeah, like, do they teach you classes on bedside manner?
Mm.
He's like, oh, no, like, not really. And like, it's all sort of like sciencey and medical, but like the doctor that you residency with can pull you aside and be like, hey, man, like, you know, you should do this a little different. And it's like, well, what if that doctor's shitty?
Yeah.
What if they have bad bedside manner?
Yeah, I know.
We're just recreating the same bad habits.
It just seems like if your goal is not to care for people...
Do no harm.
Yeah, if your goal is not to do no harm, why the fuck are you a doctor?
Truly.
Like, maybe you were a science and math star in school and you want to make a lot of money, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But... your job is literally to care for people.
Yep.
And that includes their emotional well-being.
Radical.
That includes,
I know. It's almost like they're entwined.
It's almost like your emotional well-being is really, really, really important, regardless of your physical well-being. Like, it's just radical.
Mm.
Like, I've known... people who I thought were bad at their job because they specifically didn't care about human beings.
Yeah.
And I feel like in most jobs, you should, I mean, just in general, you should care about the comfort and acceptance and respect of other human beings. Radical.
So, Alyssa has like kindly prepared
Some stats.
And for the sake of time, we're going to put all of this on our website.
Yep.
Beautiful.
bodiespodcast.com. There will be a link available in iTunes. If you go, if you're looking at us on the iTunes page, you can click website or
I trust you to figure
link
it out.
There. Yeah. I promise it's very obvious. There is a link. Yeah. And so we will be posting all of our resources for this.
Right, and we want to maintain academic integrity.
Exactly. And prove that we're coming at this from a factual basis rather than just from us being upset.
Yeah. Which is, I mean, those two coupled are really what we're going for.
Exactly. We want to involve, you know, our genuine emotions and support them with fact.
Yeah. And I think it's worth noting that the three people we shared these stories about, me, you, and our friend, are all white people.
Yep.
Right. So deduce what you will about the folks who don't have that privilege of that body in medical communities.
Yeah. Especially if you're being treated by a white doctor.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is pretty much the norm in Wisconsin. When I went to the OB, there was a woman wearing a hijab in the waiting room next to me. And I was like, wow, I hope that everything's going to go okay for you.
Yeah.
Who knows? Because when you have visibly transgressive attributes,
not
or
white Western.
Exactly. Then, you know, people are going to treat you worse.
Yeah. And there's no like reporting feature. There's no like fill out a survey as you leave.
You know what? I had such a great experience with my OB that she was so comforting and like so amazing that I tried to find a place online where I could rate her.
Yeah.
And I couldn't find her name anywhere.
That's so weird.
I know. It was wild too because
this age of technology.
I know. There are lots of sites where this exists for you to rate your doctors, but I couldn't find her. But
so weird.
Yeah. Carrie Zimba or Zimba at a Beloit Memorial.
Nice.
Thanks.
Shout out to you.
Thanks, Carrie.
So start us off.
Yes. So basically we're thinking about health disparities.
Yeah.
So the American Heart Association and the National Institutes of Health have found that only 39% of women who have a cardiac arrest in a public place were given CPR, whereas 45% of men were given CPR, and men were 23% more likely to survive. And what this demonstrates, what most of these statistics demonstrate, is that not only the general public, but also healthcare professionals are worse at dealing with women's medical issues than they are with men's.
Right. So, and then when we look at gynecology issues, specifically endometriosis, so 1 in 10 women suffer from the disease, but it takes 7 to 8 years to be diagnosed. And so Emma Cox, the chief executive of the charity Endometriosis UK, says that unless women with the disease are trying to conceive, it's overlooked by doctors. And now this is like a really painful condition.
Yeah, super painful. And it's just like, you know, we don't validate women's pain.
Right.
Yeah, as we've talked about before.
It's like, are you sure it's not your period?
Yeah, exactly. So nationwide, men wait approximately 49 minutes, before receiving care for their abdominal pain. Mm. Women wait 65 minutes on average for the exact same thing. And so this is also shown in, there's a 2000 study published in the New England Journal of Medicine that found that women are 7 times more likely than men to be misdiagnosed and then discharged while having a heart attack.
Right.
Yeah. And so the way that we understand heart attacks is very male-centric. I mean, everything is male-centric.
Right, because that's who the medical studies were done on.
Exactly.
And so that's what all the doctors are taught. It's like, here are the typical signs for people, right,
quote, in unquote,
aggressive quotation marks,
yeah,
you know, having heart attacks, but it's not true, right? Like people, a lot of women show very different.
Yep. Women typically have very different side effects. Like the pain in the left arm that is supposed to be an indicator of a heart attack. Women don't always get that.
Yeah.
Fewer women get that than men do. And there are weirder symptoms. Mm-hmm. I would say like excessive yawning in women is a symptom of a heart attack, which is wild to me.
Yeah.
Every time I yawn, I'm like, I'm dying. Yeah. But like, this is also a situation where people don't want to perform CPR on women because they're afraid of touching their breasts.
Oh my God.
And all this kind of stuff. And you can't give CPR to someone who is wearing a bra. You can't.
You can't?
It's like, it's not effective. It's not like, or I guess it is, but it's not like,
well, you want to be as effective as possible.
Exactly. Like you want to make sure that you can get, you want to make sure that you're like doing this correctly. And not only CPR, but like defibrillation.
Oh my God.
So on medical shows, when they show people having heart attacks, they don't show women having heart attacks because you can't show boobs on TV. So.
What if you have like a bralette? We should look into this.
Yeah. I mean, you definitely can't defibrillate anyone if there weren't clothes of any kind.
Oh, is that where they stick it on you and then they...
Yeah, it's a
bzzg.
Yeah, exactly. It's the bzzg. It's the shock that resets your heart rhythm. That's an interesting point, by the way, that a defibrillator does not restart your heart. It shocks your heart back into sinus rhythm.
I'm glad you know that.
Yep. So,
and there's this, like, inherent power dynamic.
Exactly.
Right? And... One thing, right, my friend who's going into the medical community, right, talked about the other day is, like, doctors are just people.
Yeah.
Right? And they all bring their own biases to the table. You know, they just have, like, a crap ton of specific education around, like, how your body performs and might interact with certain things. Right? And so I feel like I was always raised to, like, have this really high respect for doctors.
Yeah, me,
like,
too.
They know best.
Sure.
And, like, as my health has, you know, declined, ebbed and flowed, I really learned that it's, like, doctors don't always know best. Yeah. And a lot of times, like, especially with my conditions, they're just guessing.
Yeah.
Right? There's no hard science for it.
If you listen to Sawbones, which mm-hmm. we highly recommend,
please.
But if you listen to Sawbones, you will know that the entire history of medicine is all just guesses.
Oh, yeah.
It's just total, like, let's throw something at the wall and see what sticks.
Headache, let's drill a hole in your head.
Yeah. You know what? There was actually trepanation on ER the other day. I've been watching ER and it's very good. But
was it brain swelling?
It was like this guy like studied it and thought that it would like open his third eye. Like he was like.
So he went in because.
Yeah.
Okay. The doctors weren't like, we're going to drill a hole.
No. It was just a random, well, not a random guy, but a guy who drilled it for him and then they had to call an ambulance. Like, it doesn't matter. But
disclaimer, don't drill a hole in your head.
Yeah, that's the end of every Sawbones episode is very good. We're really big fans of Sawbones. Please notice us. Yeah, so there's this really, really, really terrible power dynamic where we're just expected to believe and trust doctors.
Right. And so another disparity that you can see in sort of this, like, trust.
Yeah. It's really, really bad because doctors, I think it's fair of me to say that the medical community can be elitist.
Can be.
Is elitist. And there are a lot of situations where they just automatically, distrust people. And
right. Are you drug seeking?
Exactly.
Are you, et cetera, et cetera. I know for me, I'm always terrified about that. And I'm, you know, white.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, what are you trying to get out of this? Mm-hmm. And when you're a doctor and you're bringing your own personal biases,
right.
These can be implicit as well. You mm-hmm. might not know that this is the way that your brain works, but you see this has been very common in history. You mm-hmm. see a black woman and you think, well, she should not be having babies.
Sure.
Like, or, you know, she's going to be a bad mother or she's in a bad community that's unfit for raising children, yada, mm-hmm. yada, yada. And so throughout the history of the U.S., black women have been...
Forcibly
sterilized. Thank you. That's the word I was looking for. Forcibly sterilized in lots and lots of different ways.
Right.
Whether
you're in prison and you go in for some sort of surgery, maybe you don't even know what's up and you come out and your tubes are tied.
Yeah, there have been situations where in order to, if you were arrested for like drug abuse and you have children, they'd force you to get an arm implant birth control and all this kind of stuff. There are also welfare requirements associated with forced birth control that are really fucked up.
I feel like I've heard a story about like better parole chances, like if you force sterilize, because it's like, yeah, like I'm not gonna go out and like continue to make more people who look like me who make you uncomfortable.
Yeah, exactly. There was now I can't remember. I think it was Buck v. Bell.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say that the Supreme Court case Buck v. Bell was the case where the Supreme Court said, yes, we should be sterilizing quote unquote unfit people.
Read disabled black immigrants.
Yeah, exactly. Especially people with mental disabilities. Yeah, poor people. And so just widely went out and
also did this. Eugenics.
Exactly. It was just eugenics. And so there were situations where Black women went into hospitals to have other procedures, whether it was because they were giving birth or they were getting their appendix removed or anything, anytime they went under the knife, the doctor could just decide to do a complete hysterectomy, to tie their tubes. Black women were just completely stopped from making any of their own decisions and forcibly sterilized without their knowledge.
And it's still happening today.
Exactly. And especially in the past, these doctors did not have to, like, write any of this down or save any of this. They were like, yeah, I'm just going to cut out your uterus and not tell you about it.
Can you imagine? And, like, if you cut out your uterus, like, you need, like, you know, intensive hormone replacement.
There were also situations where doctors would say, oh, well, I had to cut out your uterus because of other problems. Wink, wink.
The problem that you're an unfit mother.
Exactly. But in terms of Black women's bodies, I really recommend Angela Davis's Gender, Race, and Class. It's a super good book. Everybody should read it. But talks a lot about Black women's bodies and autonomy.
We should start a section on our website of books you need to read.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
And if you email us or, you know,
recommend other books,
we'll put it on there. Okay. Sorry. You go.
Yeah. And also just that health outcomes are worse for Black women. So a recent study found that women of color in America die from cervical cancer at twice the rate of white women in America. So there's an article from The Hill called "For Women of Color, the Healthcare Gap is Real and Deadly" by Dominica Ganem from March of 2017. And it goes over the really severe ways that women of color are disadvantaged through lack of available clinics, lack of healthcare insurance. There are also huge infant mortality rates in communities of color,
right?
Higher death rates associated with breast cancer, heart attack, stroke, and diabetes. For example, breast cancer, a Black woman is 40% more likely to die from breast cancer I know, right? It's just, it's problems with care. It's doctors and a medical community that doesn't respect the lives of Black women.
That isn't empathetic, that isn't talking to them. I read a study today that was looking at how, Black women are more likely to be diagnosed with, like, bipolar disorder or, like, have those symptoms. And then, person sort of commented on it and was saying, like, well, if you imagine sort of like all of the horrors that Black women can go through and sort of those ups and downs of survival and, you know, horror.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, that would absolutely mimic, you know, bipolar, like,
for sure. Symptoms. And there's, you know, trauma triggered depression and situations that, like, mental health is really, really, really poorly emphasized in communities of color. Like, it's a privilege to understand your mental health and to be able to obtain resources and care for your mental health. Like, that's a huge privilege.
Yeah.
And so mental health is, like, seen as, like, something fake or unimportant in communities where that's not such a privilege.
There's also, like, the myth of, like, you know, therapy is for white people.
Right. Yeah, and that you're, like, I think that's also an association with men, is that, like, oh, well, I don't need therapy, I'm a man.
How many boys have I dated who...
who really needed therapy? I know, honestly, I think that...
All of them.
I think everybody needs therapy.
Honestly!
I say this a lot, but I feel like people are pretty bad at dealing with their emotions in general.
I know I am, and I'm really... like, tapped in.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I don't know. But that's a different problem. Okay, I'm going to recommend one more thing, and then we can talk about the husband stitch. Serena Williams, as a last example in this women of color situation, Serena Williams nurses and doctors, when she was giving birth, Serena Williams, if you don't know, is a very famous tennis player. And so,
amazing.
So a very amazing tennis player.
And she's Black.
And she's Black, yes. So she knew after she gave birth that there was something wrong with her body. She knew that she had a clotting issue. She knew that she had a previous clotting issue. She told her doctor exactly what she needed.
Yeah.
Her doctors and nurses completely ignored her.
Nice.
So she had to stay in the hospital extra time and suffered for an extra week after her pregnancy, after giving birth, because these doctors just wouldn't listen to her and wouldn't believe that she knew what she was doing with her body.
Because they thought that she was just confused postpartum. pregnancy, right?
Yeah, exactly. Post-birth. Yeah, they were like, oh, she doesn't know what she's talking about. So the article, after Serena Williams gave birth, everything went bad, was posted on CNN.com at the beginning of January, and it's written by Susan Scuttle. It's really, really good and talks about the ways in which our doctors are just not paying attention. Let's talk about the husband's stitch real quick.
Oh, wait, but she had blood clots.
Oh, yes. That's exactly what was wrong. Yes, I assumed that was implied. But yes, what she thought was wrong with her was wrong with her.
Were they in her?
She had blood clots in her lungs and, like...
It's a big deal.
It's a very big deal. She had a lot of blood clots. Like, she knew that this was her problem.
And wait, she totally could have died.
I know, she could have.
And she is wealthy.
Yeah. Oh, man. If you have time, you should find the Serena Williams video. I think it was an Instagram Live video of her eating her dog's food. It's really, really funny.
Wait, why?
It's really good.
Oh, it's really nice?
Yeah.
Oh, like sweet potatoes,
it was like,
spinach.
It was like she was staying at this really fancy hotel that had a room service menu for animals. Ugh. And she was like, well, my dog's with me. I'm going to order food for my dog. And she thought, that looks really good. And she ate some of it and she got really sick.
Oh, poor baby.
Yeah. It's really funny though. It's like,
God,
it's pretty interesting. Okay. Now are you ready to talk about the husband stitch?
Am I ever ready?
I taught Willow about this the other day.
Yeah, just do it again.
Because
I'm so sad.
So this is really terrible and demonstrates another way that doctors don't care about women. So, yeah. I don't know when this started, but it still goes on today.
Yeah.
Where after you perform a vaginal birth, a doctor might sew up your vagina with an extra stitch.
Yeah.
And this extra stitch makes your vagina tighter.
Ew, it's also known as the daddy stitch.
Yeah, I know, that's gross. It makes your vagina tighter and basically, is supposed to be better for your husband. That's the idea. It's called the husband stitch. But you don't, like, doctors don't tell women that they're going to do this.
No, of course not.
Like, no. And so women find out after they have really, really, really painful sexual experiences that something is wrong. And so there are all these stories of these women who are having really painful sex and go to their OB and their doctor's like, yeah, they stitched you up extra.
Jesus. Note, the vagina is a muscle.
Yeah.
Gosh. Okay, so here it started, or there's, the medical literature can be traced to Transactions of the Texas State Medical Association.
Ugh.
I'm not surprised that it's
Texas.
In 1885.
Oh, wow.
One writer suggests that it might be a joke made by men to relieve tension after their partners have given birth.
Yeah, that's hilarious.
I'm sorry. That my birth was so traumatic for you that you need my vagina to be tighter. Maybe.
Men.
Maybe. Oh, jeez. I'm not even gonna.
I know. It's a lot. I'm. This is very upsetting, but it's, you know, fucking doctors.
Seriously.
We'll do an entire episode on the BMI scale, but.
It's fucked.
It's really, really messed up. And so we're thinking about size and weight as health indicators to doctors.
Right.
Where doctors believe, oh, you're automatically unhealthy because you weigh over 200 pounds or whatever.
Right. And how it's just flat out dangerous.
Yeah.
If your doctor fat shames you. And I don't know what the solution to that is, right? Because
yeah.
I've met people from all walks of life.
Yeah.
Whether they're privileged or, you know, they come from a really low income background, who, by the medical community, are considered obese.
Yeah.
And they get treated like garbage, right? And sometimes, like, one of my friends, like, their doctor smokes, like, a pack of cigarettes.
Sure.
It's like, you fucker. Like,
you're lecturing me on my health. Mm-hmm. You're putting nicotine in your body.
Which, you know, we'll talk about smoking. Totally.
Yeah.
But also, okay, so one thing you can do is you can bring in printouts.
Yeah.
You can send PDFs. I know that because some of the conditions I have are rare, that's like a thing that a lot of people with like EDS or like hypermobility syndromes do. It's just like, look, here's this brand new research that came out. Like, you know, please familiarize yourself.
Yeah.
Right. And I know that, you know, we've talked about this before, but it is a service-based industry.
Yeah.
And
they are doing a job for you. And if that job has not been done to your qualifications or to your specifications and wants and desires, you're allowed to go somewhere else.
Right.
Or you're allowed to tell them,
yeah,
that's not what I want. Mm-hmm. This is what I want.
Right.
Like, you should feel, I know it's difficult,
right,
but you should really feel very empowered to say, I'm the patient, mm-hmm, I'm the quote-unquote customer.
Yeah.
Like, and you need to listen to me.
Right. Bonus tip, it's been statistically shown that if you bring a male,
yeah,
into the doctor's office, they listen to you way better.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you have to use the tools in your toolbox.
Yeah.
So that, the pamphlets, oh, also write everything down, mm-hmm, before you go into a doctor's office. And that way, if they body shame you and you're like caught off guard,
mm-hmm,
you can look at your notes when you're discombobulated and go, you know what, I'm here to talk about this, yeah, and this is not related to my weight. Yeah. And I am comfortable with my weight and I'd like us to move on.
Yeah.
Right. I appreciate your concern. Let's talk about why I'm actually here.
Yeah. And of course there are health issues that, I mean, your body does so many things, and so many different parts of your body affect other parts. So it's certainly possible that there's something that your weight is affecting.
Sure.
But that doesn't mean that in that moment it is.
Sure.
So lots of people would look at me and assume that I have high blood pressure, mm-hmm, but I don't.
You don't?
I don't. Just got it tested the other day. Mm-hmm. Like, and in that very stressful situation where someone had already stuck a speculum up inside me,
oh,
I had perfectly fine blood pressure.
Oh, I'm like, surprised your blood pressure wasn't through the roof.
I know, right? So, like, so the problem is just assumptions.
Right.
That you're making based off of a person's size and shape, mm-hmm, rather than evidence and factual data.
Right. I have low blood pressure, mm-hmm, which is super dangerous. I, like, yeah, pass out all the time.
Yeah. But we just have such different correlations in our minds between health and if you're skinny and if you're fat.
Totally.
So it's considered less important or less bad.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but advocating for yourself can be really hard.
Right.
We'll put a link in on the website about tips and tricks to plan your doctor's appointment and all this kind of stuff, especially if you feel intimidated by your doctor, which is totally valid.
Like, oh, yeah. Doctors are scary.
Doctors are very scary.
All those scalpels and all those years of education and all that science.
I went and got a tattoo yesterday, and I was more relaxed, mm-hmm, and chill with my arm outstretched listening to this giant buzzing needle, yeah, than I was with my feet in some stirrups. Like,
oh, gosh.
So yeah. Oh, and then we wanted to note, which we talked about at the beginning, that, like, doctors in the medical community are still very white and male, but a last statistic for you, that white female GPs, general practitioners, outnumber male ones 52% to 48%, mm, but 55% of registered medical practitioners are male, mm, and the majority of specialists,
yeah,
are 66% are men,
mm,
and everyone is trained under the same heteronormative standards. Like, right, everyone is trained under this patriarchy. Everyone is trained to think of the average quote-unquote patient,
right,
or the average patient as a man.
Right. And
as a white man. And a, sure, cis, able white man. Yeah.
Totally. I was hearing the other day that med schools are actually more highly considering people who don't have, like, your typical scientific pre-med undergrad degree, mm-hmm, because they're starting to realize, like, oh, fuck, you know, like, we, you know, there's not one answer to health, yeah, right? I mean,
yeah,
duh. Mm-hmm. And so when you have an anthropology background or a psychology background, yeah, right, or any of these different disciplines, you're able to come in and problem solve differently.
Yeah.
And I'm just so ecstatic because, like, I talk about this with my old general practitioner, who's a young woman who I just totally look up to.
Mm-hmm.
And it's her perspective that, like, you know, the old white fuddy-duddy bad bedside manner doctors are really phasing out.
I hope so.
There's so many.
Yeah, I hope so. So we'll wrap up with some article recommendations, just two, this week. Or this episode, I guess.
Time is fake.
So in the Atlantic, there's this story about this woman with ovarian torsion, which
what is that?
It's
where something gets twisted up.
Yeah, so something grows on your ovary and drags it down, and your fallopian tube twists around itself.
Oh, they used to think that I had that when I was
having, really.
Yeah, so there was an entire year where I couldn't eat real food. Right. I vomited like every day. I would have like these crippling migraines. I would just be on the floor. And they thought that maybe I had that and that was causing it.
Yeah. This article is called How Doctors Take Women's Pain Less Seriously, written by Joe Fassler in October of 2015. But basically, he's writing about his wife, and he says they thought that she had kidney stones, and everyone in the ER was ignoring her pain. She was like, she was in agony, screaming in agony in the waiting room of this ER, and they just ignored her. They thought that she had kidney stones, and
which are also super painful.
They didn't, and so what the guy was writing about.
Oh, I'm getting a phone call.
Oh, my God. Okay.
Oh, my God. Okay.
Do it.
Okay. Hello?
Hi, can I speak to Willow, please?
Speaking.
We took a quick radio break.
Yeah. I finally got called back by my doctor's office, and they're basically like, yeah, your insurance said that you could, or right, that we could file
a pre-authorization.
But they're just going to decline it.
Yeah, so there's no point. So
it doesn't matter what you want, what your preferences is. Just take this medicine that scares the shit out of you.
Yeah, take this medication that will do nothing to improve the pain that you're in and give you opioid-like withdrawals.
Yeah, and it's maybe this medicine, gabapentin, could have worked. But, fucking placebo effect. I'm so revved up and just, horrified at, my loss of autonomy. Because I've said to these people, what rights do I have as a patient if I don't want to take this, if it makes me uncomfortable? And there's, jack shit.
Yeah, none. Okay. You have to do it. Okay. Let's wrap up. So just two articles. This woman who with the ovarian torsion.
Oh, yes. The twisties,
they kept her waiting for almost 2 hours. Ugh. And when...
with her shit all twisted up inside of her.
Yeah. When they actually did tests, when they bothered to pay attention to her and did tests, they were able to determine that it was a gynecological issue. It was a... or maybe gynecology is the wrong word, but it was a female trouble. It was a ovary issue.
Got it. Yeah. We need the English language to catch up.
I know. Seriously. It was an ovary issue. And so then they actually got an OB or a doctor who knew what they were doing to come in and be like, I can't believe they kept you waiting for so long. Her ovary was dying.
Oh my God.
That's what that is
Oh, because it did it cut off the blood flow?
Yeah, exactly. Ugh. Your ovary is dying during that time.
I'm so uncomfortable.
And it's so traumatic. Just in the way that she's in agony and they're you can wait for 2 hours.
And her husband was there too.
So yeah, and her husband out the window. And her husband was fighting for her. And it was really bad. But it's a really good article. Mm-hmm. And then there's an article in Healthline called The Husband Stitch Isn't Just a Horrifying Childbirth Myth. Mm. And it's written by Carrie Murphy, January of this year. And if you wanna know what these women are going through, you should read up on this because it's wild.
Yeah, and prepare yourself if that's something you see in the future.
Oh my gosh, yes. If you're planning on having, or if you have a vaginal delivery, you should talk to your doctor and make sure that they're not fucking doing this because...
Oh, it makes me so terrified.
It's horrible!
Especially, they plug a fucking epidural into you and you're all drugged up. You have no idea what they're doing.
An epidural is literally a paralytic. You have been paralyzed.
Fuck.
And they can just do literally whatever they want to you.
God.
It's horrifying.
Right. So, and it's so terrible that you have to be such a good advocate. But
I know, yeah.
You really, I've taken to carrying all of my medical things in a binder.
Yeah.
And I just give them, I take it and then I put all the new information in and I have written up all of my symptoms for my entire life, all of my diagnoses, all of the, this is weird, we don't know what it is. Right. And if you bring those with you, if you have weird medical conditions, print out informational sheets, even if you go to the ER, right? like EDS, we're less like numbing stuff is like way less effective on us. Like it doesn't do anything.
Really?
Yeah. And it's like, you know, they need to know that.
Oh, absolutely. It's hard to be an educated patient because it's a lot of emotional energy. Right. It's a lot of, you know, actual energy to, to research all of these things when you're not a medical professional and to be able to advocate for yourself. But if you're in a position where you're getting regularly mistreated by doctors, that's the better option.
Oh, another medical hack is that usually, so insurances don't tell you this, but you should get one, like, wellness checkup for free per year. Doesn't matter what your deductible is. And that's a great time to sort of work with your doctor to say, I'm coming in for this. And then if they sort of discover things while you're there, then it can all sort of be billed under the same wellness check. So let's say you really need to mess with your antidepressant dose. You go in for your free wellness checkup and you talk to the doctor and explain your financial situation. I always tell the doctor, like, you know, I'm so broke and my insurance is terrible. And then they work with me.
Yeah.
So.
Which is the ideal. And like I said, I had a great experience with the OB that I saw.
Yeah.
And there, I've had great experiences with mental health professionals. Like, there are doctors out there who genuinely care about people and genuinely want to make you better and feel better.
And tell your friends when you have good and bad experiences. Right. You know, you shouldn't be ashamed because a doctor treated you shittily. Like, that's on them.
I know. It's horrible. It's hard not to... it's hard not to internalize the things that a medical professional says to you.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's hard to, because we're expected to treat them with so much deference and respect.
Right.
It's hard not to internalize the terrible things that they say to you.
Absolutely.
So, you know, just keeping positive.
And right. Like, make sure you build up communities of support. So when these terrible things happen, you can talk to people, right? Or I had one of my old bosses call me last night and be like, hey, here's how I've worked with doctors in the past. And like getting around insurances who are being terrible to you, right? Yeah. And like you, like, ask for help, accept help.
Yeah.
You know, lean on your friends and family.
Yeah. That is.
Because you have to.
Yeah. That is okay and good.
Yeah. Or else your health will suffer for it.
Yeah. Seriously. I remember sometimes that things that I feel in my mind are selfish are actually very necessary for me to do.
Oh, okay.
So, like, if I'm, I don't know, having a panic attack and I need to, like, call my mom and interrupt her day, that's selfish of me to interrupt her day. Mm-hmm. But
sure.
There I go.
Or if I have to ask Will, like, hey, you know, like, my mom accidentally brought my phone upstairs and I can't go up the stairs. Yeah. Could you get that for me?
Yeah.
Like, that's so hard to ask.
Yeah.
But it's important.
Yeah. It's important to communicate with the people in your life about things that you need.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's okay.
And then, because if you don't, and then you're disappointed in them, and then that's so messy.
Yeah, and then it becomes, like, an issue of, like, guilt and shame and... yeah.
But we don't want that.
We don't want any of that. We just want everybody to be happy, healthy,
universal healthcare.
Bodies. Universal healthcare. Let's do an entire episode.
Perfect.
About universal healthcare.
I have a 30-page paper to show for.
Yeah. We're ready. God. So,
until then.
Yeah, until next time when we'll maybe
we're
get
talk
back
about
on
sex.
Track. We're going to talk about sex and there's so many, I'm so excited. We're going to do so many great things.
I'm pumped.
Yeah, it's going to be a good time.
So, fuck the patriarchy.
And take up space.
Bye.